The Guardian.
This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that gives you the power of beautiful design. So you can do more than create a website, you can set yourself apart. To start your free trial, visit squarespace.com/guardian.
Today, PL in CL equals FNL, as English clubs tumble once again, and so does England's UEFA coefficient. We ask, is the Premier League now a threat to our national security, our economic security, and your family security? We ponder what's in store this weekend as the Gunners, beaten in Zagreb, face the one English side to win midweek, Chelsea. Plus, Florenzi, football's second most famous granny hugger, stealing the midweek show in that incredible game at the Stadio Olimpico. There's more Euro news as well, and more from a hustling, bustling Premier League weekend. Villa West Brom, Swansea Everton, Stoke Leicester. It's the Swiss Derby. All that plus posts, etc. in this Football Weekly Extra. Right, listeners, all sorts of excitement here in the pod because we've got James Horncastle here.
Hi.
Yeah, there he is. And Raphael Honigstein.
Hello.
Hello. And we've also, we're banning Banter, but not banning Barry. Barry Glendening's back.
Hello.
Hi, Barry. Enjoyed your week off?
I did, yeah.
Thank Good. You. Now, Premier League, Champions League woes. Oh, here's Bunny Roney saying, lots of hand-wringing on the back pages of Israeli newspapers this morning after their team lost to a Premier League side. Yeah, Barney's just making the point
there. I don't get it.
Premier League sides don't do very well in Europe again. One game in, got a Dameron once again for the Premier League.
I'm a bit puzzled. I think City Juventus is probably not a fair reflection on the Premier League's weakness, as it were, because it was a game of very small margins and could have easily gone either way, could have been a draw. Juventus showed maybe that little bit of resilience and experience that they have, something that is perhaps missing in some of the Premier League teams, I would say, is a sense of a corporate culture. What I mean by that is you have very few teams with players who've been there for many years, who are the face of the team, who have a manager who represents the team, and who have three or four players that they can always rely on to perform. Company, maybe, as he came off, City fell apart. United certainly don't have it at the moment. Arsenal, I would say, don't have it at the moment. And I think when they come up against teams of similar quality, and Arsenal didn't, but still lost. But when you come up against teams of similar quality, I think that bit of slight intangibility, that sense of there is a team that really knows what they're doing, even when things perhaps don't go according to plan. That's something I think where the Premier League is missing.
It's an interesting theory. Company was still on when Juve equalised the other night, but as you say, it was fine margins. Had City taken their chances, had Juve not scored those two fairly remarkable goals. We'll come on to that game a little bit later on. What did a start with Arsenal in Zagreb? People will point, and I know I did, to Arsenal's decision to make six changes to his side ahead of this game. He probably felt that Zagreb, with their European record, didn't represent a big challenge. Wholesale changes, even Czech rested after, you know, the first month of the season. Did that play a part in what happened in Zagreb?
I think it played a huge part. I think it's quite clear Arsene Wenger underestimated Dynamo Zagreb. He made the changes. The lack of strength and depth of his squad was showing up. You know, say Mikel Arteta coming in from Francis Coquelin just wasn't up to the job. Wasn't an able deputy. I'm mystified by the fact that he felt the need to rest Petr Cech because, you know, rest him from what has him so tired that he needs a rest. I don't know if he'd have made much of a difference, but Ospina didn't play particularly well, and he clearly underestimated Dynamo Zagreb and paid the price. Only time will tell how heavy a price it was. But
There is definitely a sense of taking Zagreb not quite seriously, and maybe rightly so. I mean, if you'd seen how poor they were in the last...
Yeah, but if you're starting Arsenal, with the problems that they've had, I mean, this continuing narrative about them finishing second, getting knocked out in the last 16, you'd think you would do everything. I mean, for example, Bayern Munich, they didn't rest players, did they? Real Madrid, did they rest players? At home to Shakhtar Donetsk? No.
Well, I suppose you could, you know...
Barcelona didn't risk playing. I mean, it was a tough
Arsenal's
game.
Next game is against Chelsea.
Right.
I would imagine Wenger would quite happily take defeat at the hands of Dynamo Zagreb to beat Chelsea at the weekend. They're very vulnerable at the moment. Or, well, they were until they beat MacBe Tel Aviv 4-0, you know. Not sure how brilliant a result that was. But obviously you can only beat what's in front of you. Mm. But I think Wenger was clearly had one eye on the weekend game against Chelsea. Wanted to keep players fresh for that. Wants to, you know, break this terrible hoodoo Jose Mourinho has over him in competitive games.
He broke it
games.
In the Charity Shield.
That's true.
That's why it's a missed opportunity in some respects, because yeah, all the pressure's been on Chelsea, you know, in recent weeks. Yeah, they can then go and get this big result against Maccabi Tel Aviv, which you'd expect them to get. But Arsenal could still go into that game on a high, if you like, by beating Dinamo Zagreb. Instead, they go into this game knowing that if they don't get the result, a positive result, then again, it's all going to be crisis at Arsenal and that sort of thing. So I think it's a big missed opportunity. It was a big risk taken by Wenger to not be in control of that narrative going into this weekend.
All right.
I think underestimating your position is one problem, and it's probably unforgivable, but even more unforgivable in my book is overestimating your own team. And, you know, Wenger's been feeding this line that he had a team working for day and night on transfers for 3 months, but unfortunately couldn't identify anyone who's better than Arteta.
It's not a subject that's come up in the pod before now, Rappers. Tell us your thoughts.
Well, it's a never-ending story, and I think fans are really, really getting hugely upset because they don't believe it. I think you can do a lot of things. You can be economical with the truth. I think you can hide things, but to peddle a line that is just so unbelievable that it verges on being deceitful, I think you can't do. And I don't think fans and certainly neutrals believe him anymore when he says that. So what is the reason that he doesn't buy any players? There must be a reason. There's always a reason. Maybe he's got nothing to do with football. I don't know. But it is puzzling, and it undermines his key competence, or is the one thing that he had above everybody else in the past, was his ability to play the transfer market. That was his USP. Yes, nutrition, you know, don't eat steaks before games. I think eventually everybody would have figured it out, but what he did really have was an eye for players that nobody had heard of, was too afraid to buy. He brought them in. That's long gone. What is he left with? Apart from being a really nice man that players enjoy playing with because he gives them a lot of freedom.
Satellite sports channels basically killed Arsene Wenger as a manager. That's what happened. Well, okay, so they go into this game. Chelsea's still under pressure. Nice 4-0 win they had. And it was, from Chelsea's point of view, great to see Costa and Fabregas performing again, scoring, looking decisive, that kind of thing. But the fact remains that if Chelsea don't win on the weekend against Arsenal, they could be bottom by the end of Saturday. Bottom of the Premier League.
Yeah, you wonder if the changes that he made against Maccabi Tel Aviv were really, yeah, to send a message to those he left out, and whether those players will return to the starting lineup against Arsenal. Because I think while the game against Maccabi Tel Aviv probably restored some confidence levels, wasn't entirely a restoration of performance levels that we've seen from Chelsea. I think it was a step in the right direction. I thought Oscar played well. He's very much the sort of tailor in that Chelsea team, in that he stitches things together, and they've lacked that link between midfield and attack of late. I was curious to hear Mourinho after the game saying it was a good thing that Hazard missed his penalty, because it was a test of Chelsea's character from then in. They could have said, look, this is again an extension of this trend that everything is going against us, and instead they came through it and they won.
Right.
Well, you also said, I'm a fantastic manager whether I lose or win, which makes me believe, you know, why have these games?
Because
no point.
Because football's about more than just establishing Jose's credentials.
Yeah. Is it?
Very much so,
Google
yeah.
Google that.
It's also about getting... Yeah.
I think there were two things at play here. A, it was a great opportunity to send a message.
You're big on two things. Generally, people go for five,
yeah. No, I'm all about
two.
Duality
okay.
In my life. I reckon that it was a great opportunity, A, to send a message, and you know that Mourinho loves sending messages.
Okay.
By substitutions or lineups rather than just saying things.
Well, because his laptop's broken, so this is the only avenue he has still.
And at the same time, of course, it helped because you had a few fresher legs out there. I think Willian had a good game. You know, with Pedro, it's a more attacking lineup that hasn't really helped the shaky defense. Matic probably needed a rest. He still looks tired from last season. Mm. Fabregas did play, but enjoyed a bit more freedom. I think with Loftus-Cheek doing the unglamorous stuff behind him. So overall, against a very average opposition, it was the perfect kind of preparation for what is going to be a big game for them.
Okay, let's get a big Barry prediction for what's going to happen in the early kickoff Saturday. Arsenal, Barry, as you know, haven't scored against Chelsea in four Premier League meetings now, including, naturally, that 6-0 they suffered in March of last year.
Well, in the corresponding fixture last season, that was a marvellously entertaining game. That was the one where Arsene Wenger squared up to Jose in the touchline. And there should have been, could easily have been four red cards. I don't think there was any. And there was controversy as well over Thibaut Courtois playing on after sustaining what looked like quite a serious head injury. Mm. So, I mean, hopefully we'll get the same amount of entertainment. Chelsea won that one 2-0. It's a hard one to call just because Arsenal are so bloody unpredictable, aren't they? If they play well, I think they'll win. And win quite comfortably, but there's no guarantee they'll play well because you never know which Arsenal's going to turn up.
If Arsenal play well, they'll win comfortably.
I think so, yeah.
Really?
Well, I just think Chelsea have been so bad. I mean, 1-4-0 victory over Maccabi Tel Aviv. And I didn't see this game, so I don't know. I only saw brief highlights. I don't know how good or bad Maccabi Tel Aviv were. I suspect they weren't great. But up to that win, Chelsea have been pretty dreadful this season, without exception. So I would expect them to lose if Arsenal play well. But again, there's no guarantee Arsenal will play well. Just for the hell of it, because it makes no difference to me, really, on a personal level, who wins. I think it would be absolutely hilarious if Chelsea did lose and ended up bottom of the table.
Well, I think, Barry, you're a fantastic predictor, regardless of the result.
Arsenal's run of games... It's like this: Chelsea away, Spurs away, Leicester away, Olympiacos at home, Man United at home. That's a tough run of games, isn't it?
Yeah, stern examination for...
Exactly, of whether he's fantastic or not. You did it better, Rafa.
I'm Sandy Ward. Join me every Monday for The Guardian's Rugby World Cup 2015 podcast with comedian Andy Zaltzman and the best of The Guardian's sports writers. We'll be talking about all the action, the personalities and the talking points. The first episode is available now on iTunes and at theguardian.com.
Tuesday night saw Mancunian misery, Man United losing at PSV, Man City beaten at home by Juventus. Man United also, of course, losing poor old Luke Shaw. Ooh, that looked nasty. That double fracture to the leg. A game in which they had taken the lead through Memphis Depay against his old club, and then it all went wrong. What went wrong? What happened in this?
Well, they conceded a really silly equaliser from a corner. The sort of goal that can happen really to any team shouldn't happen, but it, you know, there's nothing really you can do about this. It's just Damian losing out. And then the ball coming off Blin's head, or back of his head. What they didn't really show was that kind of mentality that you've come to expect or used to see from Man United, where they say, you know, it doesn't matter, they've equalised, we're still here, we're Man United, we're just going to go and beat you again. Instead, they fell apart a little bit. And just PSV, just by, you know, doing what they had at their disposal, which was not a lot, going forward, created real trouble. And I'm coming back to my earlier point. I mean, this is not a good team, United. It has great individual players, superb individual players, some of them, but the whole sum is just far smaller than its parts. And that's a problem that City have had throughout the years in the Champions League. And now I would suggest United are suffering from a similar problem. Just haven't got a grown team. There's nothing organic about this side. People are getting thrown in and out. you know, next year there'll be another cry of, you know, people saying we need three or four more players to be world class again. And you start again. The cycle just continues.
Mm. But which luckily Arsenal managed to isolate themselves from with brilliant results. But a great result for Philippe Cocu against his old boss, Barry.
I was impressed with PSV. They were very good on the counter-attack. It's almost as if they were expecting to lose themselves and couldn't believe their luck that they won. I'm still not quite sure how they won, but hats off to them for a great performance. But I wouldn't be too dispirited if I was a Manchester United fan, because while I agree with much of what Rafa was saying, I actually thought it was one of their better performances that I've seen in recent times, despite the result. I think 99 times out of 100 they'd have won that game. And I wouldn't be too worried if I was a United fan.
Did the Luke Shaw injury, did that knock them out of their rhythm? And how much of an impact is that going to have in the weeks to come?
I think it's bound to, isn't it? You know, if you see a teammate and presumably a friend, something that horrible happened to them during a game, it's bound to affect your performance, I think, for a while at least. I hope he gets well very soon. Well, as soon as possible. It's a horrible injury, and he will be missed this season because he's been one of their best players.
They'd also found real balance in both fullback positions. I thought Shaw and Darmian very good, not only at defending as fullbacks, but very good going forward in sync, which I think is important. But again, with PSV and with, to a lesser extent, with Dinamo Zagreb, yeah, these are teams who are so far down the economic food chain that they can't buy success. They can't, particularly in Europe, they have to depend on coaching, on creating a culture and an identity through unity, which Premier League clubs, I think, no longer have to do, or no longer feel that they have to do. They don't think it's a priority. They just think they can buy it. They can throw players together, and they can win games through individuals. And yeah, I think that is where one of the aspects where they're falling.
So why doesn't that work at Arsenal? Just because they don't have the right players to create a team spirit?
Well, they don't buy players.
Well, no, but you were saying these teams don't buy players, and they achieve Arsenal results by
that. Arsenal have different issues. There's issues for City, and you know it's been a constant theme ever since they came into money that they can't quite cut it in Europe, despite having an unbelievable wage bill and great players. United, it's a fairly recent phenomenon over the last 3 years. They've become a City in that way that they bring in players all the time. It doesn't quite work. Bring on new coaches as well. Arsenal's a different issue in my view.
So what is the issue with
Arsenal's issue is that, A, there's a reluctance to look at your team in an objective heart light. Reluctance to maybe cause a bit of friction by having a real competition in the side. You know, if you feel that Giroud, you know, cannot be confronted with a player who might be better than him because it upsets him too much, and then the dressing room is not such a happy place. That's one way of coaching, and of course it brings a certain level of success, but perhaps it's not quite enough if you want to actually aim for real trophies. And then there are other issues that we talked about for so many years here in the pod. I mean, with, you know, Wenger's lack of attention to detail when it comes to coaching, doesn't really believe in adapting to the opposition. I mean, the great managers, even Mourinho, would have scouted Dinamo Zagreb to death. They would have scouted them to death, even though they probably believe deep down that they're not at the same level. I can guarantee you Wenger would have looked at them, but still told his team, you know, just do your usual stuff, play with confidence, go out there, enjoy yourself. I mean, that's what he does. And it is great when you have a real high quality of players, and Arsenal do have that, and it takes you very far, can take you quite far, and he's shown that over the years. There's a consistency in getting results, but it's not quite enough to actually get to the step beyond that, where the small details actually do matter.
And that is the big blemish on Wenger's sort of career at Arsenal, if you like. They've only got past the quarterfinals twice.
Wow. Yes, Arsenal fans, we're riffing on your pain once again. Let's just bring it back to Man U. They're away at Saints this weekend. I'm not sure what to make of Saints at the moment. They have had three clean sheets in a row. The last of them was that 0-0 draw against West Brom, I think.
Yeah.
Right. Your thoughts, Barry?
Well, it'll be interesting. Louis van Gaal and Ronald Koeman going head-to-head. They're not the best of chums, I believe, by any stretch of the imagination. it's difficult. I'm like yourself. I don't really know whether Southampton are having a good start of the season or not. Certainly not as good as they were last year. And yeah, it's a really tough one to call. And one I can't call. I'll pass it on to one of my colleagues here.
I mean, they've had injuries, and also, as we've seen in recent years, you know, they lose players every summer. And I think they do have everything in place, the recruitment strategy in place to replace those players. But there's some that are so difficult, more difficult than others to replace.
One of them might be Morgan Schneiderlin, who could well be coming into the Man United side in place of Schweini.
And you've seen it, I suppose, like teams like Dortmund, teams like even Juventus, where you can maybe afford to lose, yeah, one player, two players. It's a little bit like Jenga, you know, that you can pull one piece out and the structure still stays together. You pull another piece out, structure.
Well, we're all
stays
familiar
together,
with the game, James.
Yeah. And then it all collapses. Yeah, there you go. It doesn't all collapse, but you can't replicate the same dynamic.
It's very shaky.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, then. All right. Well, let's talk about the kind of wooden tower that Juve have in their possession after their mighty 2-1 win at the Etihad. Adam Tompkins, I said, says Adam Tompkins, Juventus would win with a Morata goal, and James believed it was optimistic. Are you sure? Yeah, I still think it was optimistic of you, because although Man City have this questionable record in Europe, particularly at home, the way Juve had started their campaign didn't lead, I think, to any kind of logical conclusion that they were going to be the first team to stop the unstoppable Man City, because Man City coming into this hadn't conceded, thumbs up all round. So what happened on Tuesday night?
Well, City could have taken the lead very early on in that game. Gigi Buffon happened, had a performance of the ages, got 9 in all of the sports papers in their player ratings. Santo Subito, make him a saint now, was the sort of headline. And I mean, he's in great form. Against Kiev on Saturday, made one of the best saves of his career. I think there was another question put on Twitter. Allegri saying he's the greatest of all time? Is he? And I remember Dino Zoff talking about Buffon, saying, "Yeah, the Buffon at the beginning of his career really was a Superman, the best of all time. But towards the end of his career, you know, I was a better goalkeeper." And I think that's changing now, because you look at the longevity in Buffon's career, the back problems he had after the 2010 World Cup, they held him back. But yeah, you compare him with the great contemporary of his generation, if you like, Iker Casillas. And Casillas has gone off a cliff. And Casillas is, I think, 4 years younger than Buffon. I mean, he was outstanding, not only on the save against Sterling, but also Yaya Toure in the second half. Did really well to allow it, when it got to 1-0, not allow it to get to 2-0 and keep his team in the game. But I think Juventus were streetwise. And also the goals that they scored, of a difficulty rating, they probably had a difficulty rating of 10. You know, I mean, incredible pass from Paul Pogba for Mandzukic. Difficult finish for Mandzukic to pull off.
The most nuanced of touches there, really.
Yeah. And
Morata's shot.
Morata, I mean, he scored a goal like that against Palermo. So that is something that he likes to try. But again, a very difficult goal to pull off.
Right. And Man City's goal should have been disallowed.
It should have been. Company all over Giorgio Chiellini. It shouldn't have stood. But I think they probably did deserve to get something out of the game, City. I just think they didn't have that now. So I do think Juventus are a team that City can learn a lot from, because for 3 years, this was a team that dominated in Serie A and had a complex whenever it came into Europe. They couldn't replicate the kind of dominance that they had domestically into the Champions League. And then last year, things changed in that they got a few lucky breaks. For example, they came up against a Dortmund team that was in crisis but was still seen as a big team, and going to the Westfalenstadion and beating them was seen as a real transformative game for them. Against Monaco, they got a little bit lucky in the first leg. They were given a penalty for a foul outside the box. Against Real Madrid in the first leg in the semi-final, you know, James Rodriguez has an attempt which Stefan Ostrava somehow gets his big toe to and hits the bar. And again, so you need all of those little things to just give you that little bit of sense of confidence, that awareness that you can come through in games like that. And I think City haven't had that yet.
One thing I think we should also mention is that City playing at home is almost a disadvantage in the Champions League, because that anxiety that you can feel, even sitting a million miles away on television, you can hear and feel that sense of anxiety and of nervousness goes from the crowd to the players and back to the crowd. And teams of Juventus' standing, they can sense these things. They feel it. They sense a weakness, and that's when they come alive. Mm. And it's happened so many times in big games for City in the Champions League that it is no longer a coincidence. It is a pattern, I believe.
Another thing we should probably mention, Paul Pogba. We had Barney here on Monday saying that he wasn't a convert to the Church of Pogba, but he was looking forward to seeing how he performed in that game. Came out with his best performance for a long time. James, why?
Well, he'd been taken out of the limelight by Allegri in the game against Chievo on Saturday. He wasn't in the starting lineup, and he'd been disappointing in the first two games of the season, which they'd lost. Worst start since 1912. And he played as though he was someone with the world on his shoulders. And yeah, he wanted to take that responsibility in this post-Tevez, Vidal and Pirlo era. But it was almost too much to expect him to be able to take this team on his back on his own.
The arrival of Hernandez, maybe, and also Storaro playing alongside him. It just shares a load a bit.
This, again, was one of those things where you didn't expect Juventus to get a result, because they hadn't looked like a team in their first three games of the season. They hadn't found this, they hadn't settled on a system that got the best out of their new players. And now I think at the right time, Allegri happened upon it, changed to a 4-3-3. Cuadrado has made a really big impact since joining the club. And yeah, everything just started to knit together that little bit better. And yeah, it was I think it could kickstart their season, just like maybe Chelsea's result against Maccabi Tel Aviv could, because they've got one thing in common, which is both came back for pre-season very late, and I think that's one of the reasons why they've started slowly.
All right. Well, Man City will be taking on West Ham. We'll talk more about that later on when we deal with the rest of the Premier League fixtures for this weekend. Elsewhere, of course, in the Champions League fixtures, match day one, Spanish sides did brilliantly on Tuesday, especially Cristiano Ronaldo there with Real Madrid, getting his 33rd hat-trick for Real Madrid.
He's now four ahead of Lionel Messi in the Champions League all-time top goal-scoring chance.
Right, and sorry about that stat on Monday's show, which got a bit confused. There was a qualifier on that, but never mind anyway. So he's on fire. But then Spanish sides had a bit of a tumble on the Wednesday when Valencia lost at home to Zenit, with Hulk actually absolutely hammering in a couple of pile-driving shots there. And Zenit coming away, AVB with a 3-2 win there at the Mestalla. Quite stirring stuff. But the other, in inverted commas, Spanish side, Barcelona, in one of the standout fixtures, going to Rome, taking the lead, but only coming away with a 1-1 draw because of what may well turn out to be the goal of the season.
It was unbelievable, wasn't it?
Yeah.
From Alessandro Florenzi, out on the right touchline, just inside the Barcelona half. He spotted the Barcelona keeper, Ter Stegen, off his line and let fly with an opportunistic shot that went in off the upright. But it was absolutely astonishing goal. Yeah. And I think if I'd done that, I'd just retire on the spot. Just go, right, you know, signal to the bench, take me off. That's it. Because I'm not going to top that as long as I live.
He said he meant it as well.
Well, I think you could tell that he meant it. No, he looks up before... Yeah. He's running along, has a look up, Ter Stegen well off his line, bang. He a couple of weeks ago against, was it Verona, the opening game of the season for Roma?
Yes.
He scored another beauty from a little bit closer in, but it's in his locker.
Yeah, I mean, was it the season before last? He scored that bicycle kick, and then there was that fantastic sort of coast-to-coast goal that he scored last season when he jumped over the advertising hoardings, jumped into the crowd, and went and celebrated with his grandmother in his 90s. So his reaction tonight wasn't
First time at the stadium that day, no?
Yeah.
And he scored this amazing goal and went and gave her a hug. It was a lovely moment. Aurora.
Yeah. His reaction Well, the reaction in the papers this morning wasn't Mamma Mia, it was Nonna Mia.
Nonna Mia.
Yeah.
My granny. But, right. That was apparently Roma's first shot on target, though, that goal. And possibly only one.
But they'd looked, I thought their game plan was really intelligent. They'd come a long way since that 7-1 defeat to Bayern Munich when Garcia was accused of hubris, arrogance, because he basically said, look, Bayern are coming to our house. We're not going to adapt to them. We're going to play our own game. And they got their pants taken down royally. And in this one, they looked to sit back, be compact, make it be very difficult to break down, and then hit with the pace that they've got on the break in Mohamed Salah and Iago Falque. And also Dzeko, he had more touches than Luis Suarez.
Right. Including a lovely nutmeg on Piqué.
Yeah, they did really well to play up to him. He held the ball up and then was giving it off to Salah. Really smart from Roma.
Barry, here's a question for you. What do Ed Byrne, Jason Byrne, Hardeep Singh Kohli and Rich Hall have in common with you, me, Ian McIntosh and Paul McGuinness? They're all performing at the Brighton Comedy.
Ah, okay. They're all performing at the Brighton Comedy Festival?
Badum tish, as Ben, the producer, would say. On Friday, the 16th of October, it is happening.
So does that mean we won't necessarily be the least funny people at it?
Who are you pointing your finger at?
Isn't Hardeep Singh Kohli? Wasn't he like a Newsnight reporter or
something?
Well,
yeah, but he was a kind of left field sideways glance type.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. I think we'll run him pretty close.
Rich Hall is
close,
very funny.
Is he?
Yeah, I know.
Should we try and see him?
Football. Given the choice, just because I've seen Ed Byrne and Jace Byrne so often, I quite like to see Rich Hall because I haven't seen him in about 15 years.
If you were a comedy novice, who would you go and see out of that lineup? Ed Byrne, Jason Byrne, Hardeep Singh Kohli, and Rich Hall, and us?
I'd go to see Rich Hall.
Rich Hall, there you go. But if you can't get tickets, come and see us. It's going to be an interesting night on October the 16th. If you want to be a part of it, tickets are on sale now. There's loads of them as well, because it's a big place. It's like 1,600 seats or something.
I'm quite scared about this one.
TheGuardian.com/GuardianLive. That's the place to go.
Could produce a bet. Could we at least get like a smoke machine for this and backing singers or something?
And
some house band.
Can you please stop talking about this? Because I'm not invited and I feel very much left out.
Oh, Rafi, you can come along as well.
Yeah.
We could find an extra seat for you. If you'd like to come along on October the 16th, I am extending an invitation to you.
No, thank you.
Okay. Now, I'm going to start off our roundup of the rest of the Premier League games, because we'll touch on one or two. Let's start with Man City West Ham, a West Ham team who last we spoke have beaten mighty Newcastle 2-0 with a brace from Dimitri Payet. Newcastle's evening didn't start the best, did it? As Steve McLaren and the Magpies, they got caught up in gridlock. There's been terrible traffic in London this week. And they had to dismount from their coach and actually walk the last mile to Upton Park. And only managed about 10 minutes or so of preparation before the game kicked off.
Surely the walk was a warm-up?
It's all about running these days.
Ah.
So perhaps if they jogged...
they probably had to run or jog because
maybe
they were probably
did.
Getting jeered at and barracked by West
Ham
fans.
That's true.
You'd hope so, anyway.
Mm.
I don't know how much of an effect that had on the game, but Newcastle have been dreadful this season. It's quite puzzling what's going on there. I can't really figure out what Steve McLaren's trying to do with his team selections, his formation. He's playing Papi Cisse up front on his own. He's not a lone front man. He never has been. He's sort of marooned from the rest of his teammates in much the same way as Christian Benteke is at Liverpool. Jack Colback and Vernon Anita are being played as very deep line holding midfielders. That's not their thing either. And Newcastle are persisting, or McLaren is sort of continuing with the 4-2-3-1 formation that hasn't worked at Newcastle for about three managers now. So, I think Newcastle fans probably started the season with something approaching optimism, and I'd say that's pretty much all gone now.
Well, we're five games in now. You have a home game with Watford for Newcastle coming up this weekend. After that, yikes, they host Chelsea and then they travel to Man City. And then you got Sunderland not long after that. You could quite easily, if things don't go well against Watford, get into the kind of eighth, ninth week of the season with still no wins on board.
This is what happens when you go from the best manager in the league to Steve McLaren.
I can't even remember his name. What was his name?
John Carver.
Thanks. Okay. Well, anyway, we've touched on there on Newcastle against Watford, which is coming up this weekend. Watford
beat Swansea. Yeah. Impressive. We're down to 10 men for the final 20 minutes, 25 minutes of that game.
Right. Newcastle, bottom of the league, only 2 goals all season. What about West Ham, though? Can they take that victory, which came on the back of a 3-0 win at Anfield, and parlay it into something at the Etihad, where Man City are going to be, well, they're going to be shaken, visibly shaken, probably, by their defeat midweek. Man City taking on West Ham. Rafa, what's your thinking?
My thinking is that City will overpower West Ham. They tend to do with most teams in the Premier League. They are irresistible going forward, especially when you allow them to get at you, as it were. Aguero, I'm not sure if he's going to be able to start after his cameo, but the performance suggests that there is not a big problem with him. So I think with him on the pitch, City are fantastic going forward.
And also, we see Kevin De Bruyne? Because, I mean, that was a surprise that he didn't start against Juventus, and Nasri played and was...
Rafa, though, yeah. West Ham. They went to Arsenal, they won there. They went to Liverpool... They won there.
It's an excellent point, and one of which I was about to make myself.
Okay, there you go.
They are very effective away from home, playing on the counter-attack. And, of course, against City, you always play counter-attack, whether you're home or away. Any real team or decent team would do that. So it's an interesting battle, but I still think that City have so much quality. We haven't even begun to see Kevin De Bruyne and what he can do, and... I just think that City are built for the Premier League. They've always been built for the Premier League. I just see them. Yes?
No, is Vincent Kompany going to be out still after he went off with that calf problem? I know he said precautionary.
It's serious.
But it was serious enough for him to leave a vital Champions League game.
Yeah.
We'll see. We'll see then. We'll see. Barry, what are your thoughts on the big derby? Well, one of two big derby games coming up this weekend. And I'm referring to Aston Villa against West Brom. This is usually a fiery fixture. A Villa coming off that disastrous match away at Leicester where they were 2-0 up with 20 minutes to go and then ended up losing 3-2. Tim Sherwood saying, I've never felt this bad.
Yeah, he's come out now and he said that Villa have got the two biggest matches this club is ever going to have ahead of us.
Wow.
Really? That's bigger West Brom at home in the Premier League and Birmingham City away in the
Capital
One Cup.
Another West Midlands derby?
Yeah.
Wow.
So, I mean, there's a sort of element of tallest pygmy in the village about this one, isn't there, I think? West Bromwich Albion are decent at the back, don't have much going forward.
Will Berahino be back in the mix for them?
Well, it's... don't know.
He's back in the squad.
Pulis will almost certainly play a 4-5-1, and whether or not Berahino is that one, I suppose only time will tell. I'd expect West Brom to sit back, be pretty obdurate in defence, and invite Villa at them and, you know, come and break us down. And
right. Which they did, of course, in both meetings at Villa Park last year. They won 2-1 in the Premier League. And also there was that FA Cup game, you remember, with the pitch invasion after 2-0 to Villa.
I mean, you'd think Villa would have enough about them going forward to be able to score a goal or two.
Right.
Whether or not they can keep a clean sheet remains to be seen. There's a few interesting sort of tidbits about
that. But your
that
face suggests they're not that interesting at all, Barry.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, to Julian Lescott. And Lescott, as I call him. And Scott Sinclair. He had a disastrous spell on loan at West Brom, so he'll have a point to prove.
Oh, right, okay.
And he's in form, sort of.
All right, let's move away from those interesting points and look for a second at the other derby this weekend. Spurs against Palace, my word. Tottenham have had 1 win in 5. Kane hasn't scored a goal. Nate Mason got a goal but then did his knee. And now they're taking on high-flying Crystal Palace, who are especially good, a bit like West Ham, especially good away from home. Ooh, and Spurs might make might give Son his first home start. How good is he, Rafa, Son? Hong Yong-min Son?
Yeah, he's good. He's very fast. He loves to shoot from the box. Likes to cut in. He's a real good outlet going forward. I'm just not sure in this team that he will actually make much of a difference. He's a bit lightweight. He's a bit inconsistent and
doesn't sound like a Spurs kind of player.
Yeah,
at all.
Exactly. I mean, Spurs have a lot of players of similar kind of caliber, but technically, he's very good. Oh. He's got what it takes, potentially.
You think he's got the attributes to play the pressing game that Pochettino wants?
Yes, absolutely. He's been used to that.
Does Pochettino still want a pressing game? Because I've noticed Spurs certainly aren't playing one. Do the players just not bother listening to him anymore? Or has he decided to let them not press as hard as they used to?
I'm not sure.
After two years of Pochettino, I think it's probably a case
you're a bit
to be
underwhelmed.
Made. Well, no, I just think
it's only second season.
Yeah, but in England, I think there is a sense that could he vary his tactics a little bit more, vary what he does, because I think we all know what he's about now, and maybe that's something that opponents have got used to. They've figured him out a little.
Should he be a bit more flexible, like Brendan Rodgers? Yes. The system and philosophy, very adaptable.
Hey, thanks for mentioning Brendan Rodgers, because I was going to come on to him next with Liverpool's game against Norwich. Palace, of course, who will be playing Spurs, only narrowly beaten by Man City last weekend. Spurs, who've had that terrible start, and now they're going to be playing the Europa League as well. They're taking on Karabakh. So that might have an impact on that game as well. It could be one of those Palace games, you know, where they do. But Liverpool, who are also in the Europa League Thursday night, they are away at Bordeaux. No easy fixture to that. And then on Sunday, they're home to Norwich. Now, this could be just the game that Liverpool need, because in the past four meetings with the Canaries, it's been 3-2, 5-1, 5-0 and 5-2.
Or they've no Luis Suarez to score a hat-trick now.
Or again, it might not be, because as you say, Barry, Suarez is not there. Sterling's been sold. Gerrard's in Los Angeles. Sane's a distant memory. And Henderson injured. So nobody who scored any of those 18 goals that I've just listed will be playing for Liverpool this weekend as they take on Norwich. A Norwich side, who, correct me if I'm wrong, hadn't lost a single away game in 2015 under Alex Neil until the other day when they did lose one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So could that be another one of those Brendan Rodgers, we were outstanding, but it didn't go the way we wanted, post-game moments?
I think he could get sacked if Liverpool lose that game.
This weekend, Barry?
Yeah.
Who would take his place? I love this kind of thing.
I'm going to look at Rafa as I say Jurgen Klopp to see what kind of reaction I get. And I get a laugh, a snigger at my foolishness.
Come on, Rafa, you know Klopp's
I'm
people.
I'm being treated as Jurgen Klopp's unofficial.
Yeah.
Well, you're
the
German.
British representative.
You must know him.
Rafa's going to say, sorry. wait. It speaks.
I mean, it's no secret by now that Liverpool have tried twice to get Klopp to take over. They didn't go for him in the summer when he was clearly available, so they stuck with Brendan Rodgers. Now, I believe, and I have to say, this is not really backed up by any hard facts, but there's a sense, just talking to one or two people, that maybe there's an opportunity to sit down and discuss things going forward, maybe in November. I'm not sure if that's directly related to what Liverpool are doing this season, or maybe it's already for next season. Maybe this is just exploratory talks. But I do agree with Barry that I think Rodgers is under real pressure. And if you see how many players he left at home for the Bordeaux game, because he wants to concentrate on Norwich, you know, Bordeaux, no. Norwich, yes, we're going for that one. Shows you just how important it is. And I think in Liverpool now, there's a real sense of people being afraid that this is another year where they're not really making any progress. And if worse, where the team perhaps is regressing because nobody really is quite sure what Rodgers' game plan is. You know, it used to be all about possession. Then it was counter-attack. Last year was an attempt to marry the two of them. This year, I don't know. I don't know what they're trying to do half of the time. And the players that they've bought have been okay, but not anyone who's really taken them to the next level either. So it's a real underwhelming and disconcerting early show from Liverpool, which I think has a lot of people lose a bit of confidence in the current setup.
I heard from somebody who would be pretty well connected with people behind the scenes at Liverpool that Rodgers was told before the Manchester United game that if he did not get 7 points out of the next 9 available, he would lose his job. So that's already an impossibility. I think this game coming up is a free pass for Norwich. And on their day when they're relaxed, and they're a really good side, I think they could give Liverpool all sorts of problems. Particularly if Liverpool are players are under pressure, and I suspect some Liverpool players might want to see the back of Brendan Rodgers, and they might not put in a performance for him. So it will be one of the weekend's more interesting games, I suspect. Just see how it pans out.
It's right up there with Villa West Brom, isn't it?
No, but I cannot believe that an owner would say to you, unless you get a point away to Man United, you'll be fired. That can't be right.
Well, the manner in which they set up against United would suggest this point is exactly what they wanted. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I'm going on what I heard from someone would know.
Exactly.
Or I think would know, but it could be a load of balls. I don't know. Yeah.
All right.
So don't shoot the messenger is what I'm saying.
I'm not shooting any messengers here. I'm taking that on board, and I'm looking forward, armed with that information, even more now to Liverpool Norwich. I wonder what you're going to say next to spice up the already tasty-looking Swansea Everton. Hey, PIP at Shallow Pip says, can Everton push for top four this season? Short answer, James? Is it a short answer? It's an intake of breath. It's a thing.
Top four.
Top four this season. Has to be short. Ben's got things to do. We're running out of tape.
I don't think Liverpool will make top four.
Right.
I think United have got enough about them to stay there. So I think it's going to be difficult for them.
Difficult for them. Okay. Is it going to be difficult for them there at the Liberty Stadium? Swansea, of course, coming off that disappointing defeat against Watford. And you're going to this game, Barry?
Yeah.
All right. Well, tell us all about it. Does Naismith start for Martinez after that incredible hat-trick against Chelsea?
You'd think he'd have to, really. I don't know what to tell you.
All right,
it's my first time at the Liberty Stadium.
Well, that'll be nice because people rave about that place.
Yeah.
That should actually be a brilliant game, Swansea against Everton.
Why do you think, Rafa?
Well, because Swansea like to play really good football. They're constantly being underrated. The Watford result maybe suggests that there is something that's not quite there when it comes to having the consistency to go really further up the table. But I think when it comes to their tactics, when it comes to the transfer window, they are one of the best-led clubs, best-run clubs in the Premier League. And Everton must have a real sense of belief after that fantastic result against Chelsea. So it should be a really good game.
Yeah, interesting to see what John Stones does up against Alex Gomez and Ayew. Also interesting this weekend, Stoke, who are still winless in the Premier League and haven't scored in their last two games, hosting the very, very exciting Leicester, where Ranieri continues to thrill and amaze. They're up in second place. Are they? Yeah, they are. They're up in second place. You shook your head at me. I thought, no, you were shaking your head in disbelief. It was a rhetorical shake.
The nearly man, you know, still.
Well,
you know,
could
this way just narrowly misses out on the Premier League title, Ranieri?
It's Leicester.
Yeah.
At what point will Mark Hughes start to come under pressure?
Well,
because Stoke...
I've already nailed my colours to the mast on that.
What?
I think that they are no longer Stoke as we know them, and it's going to prove to be their undoing. They've flown too close to the sun, I think.
Okay, yeah. I can see how you would think that.
The wax is melting off their wings as we speak. Rafa, it's a game that you've been invited to go and attend because of the high quotient of Swiss players.
That is true. Unfortunately, I won't be able to make it to Stoke. And since the Premier League has this weird concept that you can't show games between 3 and 5, there's absolutely no way of covering this game.
You know what they should do? They should show all of them at once on one channel with all the goals.
It's very successful in Germany.
Yep, there you go. Riyad Mahrez, 6 goals and 1 assist in his last 8 Premier League games. This isn't really pod business, but I've been holding off on putting him in my fancy team because I know. I touched on this on Monday because I keep thinking the bubble's going to burst. But have I got to bite the bullet and stick him in?
It's the same with Jamie Vardy.
Really? I should put the two of them in?
I think there are 3 players who, like, you hold off, you think, they can't keep doing it.
Right.
There's Payet, there's Mahrez, and there's Vardy.
Okay. I don't have Jamie Vardy in because I just don't like the look of him.
Oh.
Which is kind of an irrational reason not to have him in.
Well, yes.
It's just something about him I'm not that keen on.
Do you have
this
any?
Is what the baseball coaches used to say before Billy Beane arrived. He's not pretty enough.
Hi, Billy. By the way, because
Hi, Billy. Hi, Billy.
And hi, baseball coach as well, because they're probably listening too.
Well,
trying to catch up desperately. Yeah.
Almost getting to October.
Yeah, that's true.
Hi, Mogwai.
Hi. Now, this is a surprise. Ray Davis of the Kinks.
What?
Yes.
Really?
Hi, Ray.
Yeah. Hi, you, listener.
Really? Ray Davis?
Yeah.
Maybe he'd do a new intro for us, seeing as you upset Mogwai.
Well, they didn't offer to do a new intro. That's the whole point. They said they might have something lying around that we haven't used. We've only got one game left to talk about. Let's talk about it. It is the epic journey that will take Sunderland fans all the way down to the Vitality Stadium at Dean Court to face Bournemouth. 700 miles away from Sunderland anyway. I beg your pardon. It's actually 350 miles away from Sunderland. but the round trip, you see, becomes 700
the crow
miles.
Flies.
Barry, quick Sunderland update. It says here, much improved in their 1-0 defeat to Spurs.
I struggle to see that, to be honest, but I seem to be a lone voice. I thought they were pretty awful. But if that's a huge improvement, then they must have been really, really bad. And I suspect they were really bad. I hope their travelling support gets something to cheer about on their 700-mile round journey.
Mm. Yeah. Okay, and... so those are some exciting options for this weekend. We'll be back on Monday with Football Weekly as ever. Hope you have a terrific time in the meanwhile. And thanks, everybody, very much. Bye for now.
This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace. If you want to build a website, you've got many options. But if you want to build it beautiful, there's only one. Squarespace gives you the power of world-class design so you can do more than create a website. You can set yourself apart. See why some of the world's most influential people, brands and businesses choose Squarespace. To start your free trial, head to squarespace.com/guardian.